Concert Concert Billboard.
And this has been your weekday concert billboard. Stay tuned to WUSB Stony Brook 90.1 FM and WUSB.FM on the web. We're in our fall fundraising drive. You can either call us at 632-6901 or go to the website WUSB.FM/pledge or just click the word pledge on the far left side. Please be generous.
And please, if you can, lean on that zero key a little bit. We appreciate it. It's 2 minutes after 6 o'clock. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. And that means it's time for Off the Wall.
Thank you.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. This is Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this. What does that mean, Finn? I don't know what that... You're holding your head. What, there's no sound in there? Well, there's no sound in there because I have the microphone. You have to... Okay, there's a switch. You see where that light is? If you throw that switch underneath the on-air light, that'll unmute the speakers, and then you can listen. Wait, you can't hear me say that, can you? Because you can't hear me. Oh, boy. I'm sorry for giving directions out over the radio to people in other studios, but it is important that our staff who are taking phone calls be entertained while they're not taking phone calls because, well, sometimes the phones don't ring. It does happen sometimes. Hopefully that won't happen this time because we have 1 hour on the air tonight and we're supposed to raise $5,000. Who wrote that down? No one's ever raised $5,000 in an hour at this place, or any place. Okay, folks, you know what? If you can help us, if we could raise $500 or even $50, anything would help. 631-632-6901 is our phone number, and we've got, for the last time, and I mean it this time, the last time, we've got the full set of Hope DVDs, 100 DVDs for a pledge of $150. And... yeah, that's something that you would pay more than double that, and people do, to get the full collection. So 631-632-6901, get the full 100 or so talks that took place this July at the Hackers on Planet Earth Conference. We'll get more into that in just a little bit. I want to welcome Kyle from Seattle. You there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I hear you just fine. You're coming through the board loud and clear.
Cool.
Yes. There's a little bit of confusion in the studio, but that's normal for us, I guess. How have you been?
Me?
Yeah, you.
Oh. pretty good. A little parched out here.
Yeah, you know what? We're getting your weather. I don't understand it. It's been raining practically every single day. I love it. I think rain is great, and I like the cool, windy temperatures that we're getting. But out there, it's like you're getting sunny and hot and dry.
Right, it's like, I said this before, I think, on another show, it's becoming L.A.
That's a horrible thing to say to anybody, really, even to people in L.A.
Right, even the little dogs are getting plastic surgery. And
that's
great.
Yeah, that's not cool. That you got to stop that. I don't know what's going on. The world is all turned around, and... I'm sorry. I wish we could help, but we have your weather apparently. If you want it, you know where to get it.
Yeah. Well, they keep saying in the mornings that there's fog, and I don't think it's fog. It's forest fire smoke.
I heard about that. I heard there's
funny.
Many. Well, forest fires get rather popular when there's little rain. And when's the last time it rained for you guys?
You can't convince me that fog, quote fog,
mm-hmm.
when it hasn't rained in months. Can't convince me that isn't smoke.
Yeah, well, maybe they're just trying to, you know, paint a rosy light over the whole thing.
Pretty much.
But now, as far as, when was the last time you recall an actual downpour? Was it even when you were home, or was it while you were still out here?
No, it has not rained since I've been home.
You've been home for over 2 months now, and you're saying it has not rained once. Not one rain shower, not one deluge, not one downpour.
Not anywhere around me.
Not even some drizzle, not even some mild precipitation. Not even overcast skies?
Yeah, no.
Wow.
Don't think so. No.
It sounds like some kind of a hell. I don't understand how this is happening. But no doubt it's got something to do with the Republican agenda and global warming and all those ideas that they have.
I blame Obama.
Well, you could blame Obama, too. Let's just blame Obama. It's fun. For traffic jams, for bad weather, for everything.
Oh, yeah, we have record traffic now.
Oh, yeah, I heard that, too. I didn't mean to bring that up, but yeah apparently Seattle is well up there, I think in number 4 of the top 10 cities with congestion on the roads. And the weird thing is, New York City isn't even on the list.
Yeah, well, what's going on is we have a lot of projects that are going on as far as... construction and road work, which is sort of ongoing, can't really hold a flame to New York, but it's much in the same spirit as New York, with the whole like tantric ongoing construction on roads. But be that as it may, I think they're using all the hot weather to eat more lunches on their job sites, you know, as long as they can. And it just seems like there's five different road projects going on, or six, you know, plus we have new toll bridges and all kinds of just new things that are really throwing people. People are literally moving from West Seattle to downtown because it's demoralizing to sit in traffic. I think that was an article you sent me, actually. It's pretty interesting stuff, but it is real. It's not just a story. It's horrible. I was running some soda around the other day, and I sat in traffic for several hours. And
several hours?
Yeah, well, I mean, I was just trying to get down to the South End.
Uh-huh.
And I'm pretty good at, like, knowing the roads, knowing when to go where, and that sort of thing. But I didn't even make it to an I-5 interchange until the South Center Hill was already backed up, and it was like, oh, it's just crazy. And then I couldn't even get on 405. Then I took, like, South Center Parkway and then some other roads. It was pretty...
Kyle's using a lot of technical...
the East Valley of Kent.
Technical terms for Seattle roads that might be confusing our listeners, but...
Yeah, they may not know any of those.
It makes sense. It does make sense. I've been there, I've seen it, and what he says is true. But, wow, you know, it reminds me of that time in New York when I made the bad decision to drive across town in the middle of the day because you wanted to go to B&H, and I figured we had enough time to do that and go downtown. Boy, was I wrong, because for some reason I picked the road that all the buses and trucks were going down, and there were traffic jams and cops and construction, and, you know, I thought that was as bad as it could possibly be. At one time, I was jumping up and down on my roof of the car. The thing is, in New York, people are very expressive. There's a lot of shouting and gesturing, and sometimes people even hold up signs towards each other to express their discontent and disappointment. But it's part of the whole process. I think, you know, we wind up being more patient as a result and just sort of not getting as stressed out about it. I've been hearing in Seattle there's a lot of road rage. A lot of people really can't handle the stress and are taking it out in inappropriate manners.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, it's a very real thing. That trip I was talking about usually takes like 15 minutes on several different highways and freeways, but that took me like 2 hours, and I was pulling out all the stops to, like, navigate around and you know, get there on smaller roads, you know, sit at lights a little bit. But that's worse than I've ever seen it. I mean, something, I was really amazed. It took me, like, two or three times longer than I thought it was going to take, even anticipating that, okay, wow, now I'm stuck in traffic. But it took twice, if not three times longer, just to sit in that. And it's very real. It's worse than I've ever seen it. Basically, people are sort of nice in Washington, and we actually have very smart drivers. I don't know if that's even possible. It's sort of an oxymoron, but we're said to have some of the smartest drivers in the country. But it doesn't mean that they're patient or understanding. They sort of don't have very much tolerance.
Yeah, sometimes smart people aren't the best people in stressful situations. You know,
right, and when you add to the mix that a lot of people are armed out here. Like,
oh,
really,
boy. I wasn't going to go there, but yeah, okay, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, Washington's got really, like, friendly gun laws, like, ridiculously. So, I mean, it's you know, taken care of.
I saw,
process all
I,
that, but.
I saw the application form for carrying a concealed permit, and I swear to God, it is one of the simplest forms I've ever seen. Applying to be, what's something complicated? I don't know. What would you apply to? Applying to drive a car, I guess, or applying to school seems to be more complicated than filling out this thing where you'd be carrying a deadly weapon. It's basically, yeah, what's your name? What's your address? Are you a criminal? Are you lying right now? Okay, well, here's your gun. Well, no, actually, you have to buy the gun, but still, here's your permit that lets you do that. It really seemed very, very simple, something you could get done in a couple of minutes.
Right, and anyway, so if people haven't been here for a long time, or they're transplants, or, I don't know, maybe they're from, like, rural areas, and they don't normally sit in traffic, they can't really compare with anything, they might be foolhardy and think, like, oh, okay, well, this is abnormal, this is really crazy, and then the tension rises, because they don't get that this is a trend, that this is, like, over the long term, it's been getting worse and worse, and they also really have no respect for, like, you know, people that bicycle or public transportation, and to that end, it's like the furthest thing from their mind that they actually step out of their metal pod and interact with the world, say, on a bicycle or perhaps a bus.
Interesting.
So, anyway, long story long, I think people just have to wise up and realize that it's like you're basically going to spend your whole day in the car. You know, you risk spending your whole day in your car if you're not careful with how you plan your trips and when you leave.
Wow. Well, it's interesting you should mention bicycles, too, because I don't mean to keep rubbing salt in the wound here, but there was a study that came out recently in Bicycling Magazine that put New York well ahead of Seattle as far as bike-friendly cities. And I was blown away by that because I always thought of Seattle as one of the most friendly bike cities. And to put New York ahead of that, yeah, that's a lot more people riding bikes in New York. If there was some kind of a rating system for the intelligence of bicyclists, I would definitely put Seattle well ahead of New York because people in New York simply don't play it safe. They don't think ahead, and you can't simply paint lines on a road and say that's a bike path and expect people to be safe. They're not. They're riding around without helmets. They're not obeying traffic laws. They're doing dangerous things. And when I was in Seattle, I got the sense that people, for the most part, really understood the risks and knew the precautions to take. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think it's accurate. And I think that I heard a great story a couple months back on PRX or one of the stations I listen to, KBCS out here. One show, I think it was Public Radio Remix Overnight, I was listening, and there's some special on cities and urban planning. Maybe it wasn't that show, but regardless, the quotation I heard that really stuck with me was, and it was local programming, I think, so maybe it wasn't that particular show, but regardless.
The best kind of programming.
The quotation was, you know, any transportation, regarding transportation in Seattle, anything that is not a car is either a nuisance or an afterthought.
Wow.
And I think that's true. I think that a lot of the bike lanes and the painting, I mean, they'll call anything a bike route in Seattle. The truth is, it's sort of strapped, you know, it's bootstrapped on after the fact. It's not integrated into any of the designing. Now, that's not entirely true. Some of the projects they're doing are pretty impressive, and it's slow. But I think what they do is, like, land grab for bike routes, and then when that area gets repaved, they then integrate and say, oh, well, this has been a bike route for a couple of years now. And to that end, they're able to build it out. But it's certainly not by design bike-friendly, you know, the way it's set up.
Well, I remember hearing a story, I think it was last year, somebody who died on a bike by falling down the stairs. It sounds like something that was his fault, falling down the stairs on a bike. But no, he was riding down the street, and the bike lane turned to the right. He kept going straight because there was a path, and that went down a steep staircase, and he was killed as a result of that. And that speaks to what you're saying about poor planning,
right?
And things that people don't anticipate. But I'm talking about the overall preparedness of bike riders. When I was in Seattle, I noticed everyone wore helmets. People were aware of cars. They didn't battle them as much. I'm not speaking to the intelligence of the drivers. I'm saying the intelligence of the bicyclists. They seem to be more aware of the environment around them. Of course, I was around you a lot, so and I know this is your strength, so maybe I was just noticing your habits, but I'd like to think that people in Seattle get that.
I think the attitude in New York is more about, like, chastising drivers. Here, there's less chastising. It's more about communicating with drivers. But that's just my opinion, and I don't know many bicyclists in New York per se, but I feel like there's this, like, punk messenger attitude of, like, well, I'm going to just hang on to the back of the car and slap hoods and, you know, teach them, which you see a little bit out here, but I think really what it's about is using hand signals, communicating with drivers, showing them that you're aware that they're there,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, using common sense and bicycle safety, you know, staying to the right and, you know, being well illuminated and wearing the right protective equipment, PPE, you know, personal protective equipment. It's crucial. So
Absolutely. All
of that, I think, makes it, you know, slightly better. But, you know, an intersection between the whole traffic and all the things that are causing congestion, great example of that and sort of what you were referring to, which is that bike path that has stairs in the middle of it.
Yes.
They repaved this area out here, put in beautiful bike lanes, all this stuff, and then proceeded to knock down a bridge.
Uh-huh.
There was like a crucial artery. That forced everybody who was riding on the beautiful bike lanes to then take a detour over a bridge with zero bike lanes and tons of traffic. You know, you have major UPS, FedEx, you know, shipping hubs, you know, fantastic amounts of traffic are now being funneled onto one bridge where there were four before.
Wow.
One closed. The other three are still there. Or other two ways to do it are still there, but of course everybody goes to the closest one. So Fourth Avenue Bridge is ridiculously congested. There's a Costco on the other side. So I mean, you can imagine it's just insanity with package drivers. And so that's it. It's like, okay, yeah, we're improving. We have bike lanes here. Now everybody has to risk their life on this bridge with all this traffic. It's just insane that, like, one step forward, two steps back, that kind of thing is definitely something you have to take into account when you plan your day on a bike.
Right. Well, I think you should drag the city planner in front of a board of inquiry and ask them what in God's name they're thinking, because that sounds criminal as far as what they're expecting people to go through. You can't have a bike lane and then suddenly put everybody into traffic and expect them to somehow get across the bridge.
How about this? That bridge, Fourth Avenue Bridge, the barrier on the right-hand side is about 2 feet high. Literally goes up to your knees. What's under that? That's about that. Under that bridge is 8 lanes of Union Pacific Railroad.
Oh boy!
So if you're on a tall bike, for instance, riding on the right-hand side, if you lean one way or the other, you could, or some car nudges by you, something like that, you get cut off, and you lean too far to the right, you're well above the guardrail and are basically looking at a 20-foot drop on some train tracks.
Okay, so. Kyle, now I know you have a tall bike. Please tell me you don't ride that route on your tall bike.
I do not, and I have not since this bridge has been closed. Now, they're going to fix this bridge. It's nearly complete, and we'll have that artery and hopefully a nice guardrail. But I actually go all the way to the waterfront these days when I ride the tall bike into town.
Great.
But anyway, that's the scoop on traffic here. So.
Isn't this awesome? We're here on WUSB, Stony Brook, New York. We're talking about Seattle traffic and bike rules and customs and things like that. And it's interesting. It's fascinating. That's what you can do with local radio. I had no idea we were going to be talking about this tonight either. I asked if you wanted to be on the show, I think, about an hour ago. So that is what I hope people will call up and support, is that kind of spontaneity that we have here at this radio station. And ask yourself, as you tune around, well, don't tune around now, because then you won't be able to hear the end of my sentence, but in the past, as you've tuned around, you probably have noted that radio is not that spontaneous. You can't really be a part of it yourself. You can't call in and express your opinion. You certainly can't give suggestions as to what direction things might go in. All you can do pretty much is turn on the radio and hear what somebody else has decided you're going to listen to, whether it be top 40 music or, what is it, religion. The latest thing is sports. You know, we're getting yet another FM sports channel. What is with this country and sports? It's an obsession. It's a dangerous obsession. I would hasten to say it's almost like a drug. Yes, crack cocaine. That's what organized sports is becoming to us. When I was a kid, we didn't have sports networks. We had sports occasionally on broadcast TV and on the radio, like a ball game or something like that. And you know what? We enjoyed that together. We got on with our lives. But now you've got 24-hour sports networks of every single sort. If you count them up, there must be hundreds of them. And you have not only 24-hour sports networks on AM radio, now they're moving to FM radio. And there's only a finite amount of space. So I have to wonder, what is going on here with this obsession with these things? There are other things to talk about besides sports, right? I mean, we've been talking about bicycling and well, traffic, too. That's always interesting. But I've just seen such a change. And I'm kind of impassioned because I am so sick of the Yankees. I am so sick of them. Oh, my God, will they please stop winning? It's annoying to me to have. And, yeah, I'm from New York, so I should like them, but I don't, because in my opinion, what they do is they simply buy a pennant every year because they have more money to spend to get the best players and to have everything they want. It just seems so unfair. In a way, it's kind of like a microcosm of the U.S., where we always wind up on top because everything is just given to us. And, I kind of like to even the playing field now and then. I think Yankees need to finish in last place every now and then as well. The Mets wouldn't be nice if they won, you know, every 20 years or so. So there's something about it. And that's why I'm rooting for Baltimore in the current series. Yeah, they're playing Baltimore right now. And, I'm not what you would call a typical baseball fan. I just like rooting for the underdog. And in this particular case, I am just fed up with the same thing happening year after year, And just the sense of entitlement that we're always going to win, we're always going to be on top. It's been going on for decades. You know, they've won a lot of World Series. I think there should be a cap. I think maybe every team should have the same amount of money to work things out and to pay all their players. Maybe teams should only be allowed to have players from the local area. Wouldn't that be something? If everybody on the New York Yankees was a New Yorker and they were born and bred here, then you would see some interesting development of talent. Do you have a baseball team out there in Seattle, Kyle?
What?
What the Seattle Pilots, right? No, wait. No, that's not right. That,
what?
You used to have a team called the Seattle Pilots. You know that, right?
Yeah. It's the Seahawks. That's all you need to know.
No, that's the football team. Even I know that. Mariners, that's it. The Seattle Mariners, that's your team, right? I'm sorry. There's a lot I have to keep track of.
Mariners, you're right.
All right, but the Seattle Pilots, have you heard of them?
No, I mean, I know that that's a historical name for the team. Is that true?
No, that's an old team. That used to be a team, and I think that's a much better name because of all the aircraft in Seattle. The Seattle Pilots, okay, what happened to that? I should know this. This is the kind of thing I keep track of.
You dare.
The Seattle Pilots, baseball teams don't go out of business, so they had to move someplace. Let me think.
Pilots, they could be meaning like tugboat pilot.
Well, true. Yeah, there's many different meanings for it.
Much more of a marine vibe here. I know you.
It could be like a situation comedy, like set in Seattle, a pilot for a TV show that never took off. That it could be referring to that. However, I think it probably has to do with aircraft because of Boeing Field and all the aircraft type things that come out of Seattle. But the team did not make it for some reason. And I'm not looking on the computer here. I'm trying to think in real life where. And people don't do this anymore, where that team actually wound up. I want to say an educated guess. I think they moved to Kansas City. I think they might have become the Kansas City Royals. I'm not sure if that's right, but I think that's what they did.
Historically, the Pilots are now the Royals.
That might have happened.
Are you aware that they also took our basketball team?
Kansas City took your basketball team, too?
Yeah.
That's war, as far as I'm concerned.
I mean, the Sonics are gone forever.
The Supersonics, not just the Sonics, the Supersonics. Did they stop being super at some point?
No. Never. They never stopped being super. It's just money. It's money and greed and, yeah, basically we lost our basketball team. And it wasn't a very good team. I mean, wasn't
you
winning
have
that much.
Billboards up there saying, has anyone seen our basketball team? Because they've basically been lost. I'm sorry. I don't mean to make light of it. But you have the Sounders at least. You have the Seattle Sounders.
Right. Yeah, we've got the Sounders. And we've got the Storm.
What's the Storm? I don't know what that is. I'm sorry.
WNBA.
Oh.
We have the Thunderbirds.
I don't know what that is either. Who are they?
The hockey team.
What hockey team?
The Thunderbirds.
How do you have a hockey team? You don't have a hockey team.
It's not a pro hockey
team. Oh,
I think one lower than pro.
Okay.
But I'm not sure how that works, and I don't want to get into it. There's plenty of other things to talk about.
All right, yeah, there are, and sports is definitely
something.
Way too
many teeth for hockey conversations.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, I do think the Seattle Pilots went to Kansas City. I'm going to check this after the show. And you know, just to give some more information about Kansas City, they had another team, too. I think this made up for the team that they lost. Originally, there was a team called the Philadelphia Athletics. Philadelphia had two teams. They had the Phillies and the Athletics. Philadelphia Athletics were moving to California, but then their bus broke down, so they settled in Kansas City for a while and became the Kansas City Athletics for a few years, and then finally fixed the bus and moved on to Oakland and became the Oakland Athletics. It's a true story. Look it up.
My eyes and ears have glazed over. I don't know what you're talking
about. Okay, no, that's a healthy reaction. All right, we haven't gotten no phone calls because we've been bantering on and people have been riveted to the radio and they're so fascinated by all this. So we need to get at least one phone call coming in or I'll be chewed out after the show. And I don't like that. Really don't. It's demeaning to everybody. Our phone number, 631-632-6901. What we are offering tonight is really the entire HOPE conference, and Hackers on Planet Earth takes place every 2 years, and it took place this last July. And we had all kinds of amazing speakers. We had William Binney, an NSA analyst turned whistleblower. We had the Yes Men. We had Steve Rambam. We had a social engineering escapade. We had so many different people talking about computer exploits and telephone tricks. and ways of organizing as social groups and things like that. It is a fascinating collection. And if you were at the conference, you know what a great conference it was. There's no way you could have seen all these talks. We had three different tracks going on at the same time. So this is a great way to have enough viewing material to last you until the next conference takes place in 2014. We're offering it tonight for those people who pledge to this radio station, help keep us on the air. We're offering that for only $150, 631-632-6901. Ordinarily, this goes for $400. So usually what happens on fundraisers, if you listen to NPR and all those other people, they take a coffee mug and they say for $125 you can get a coffee mug. And people actually call for that. But no coffee mug on earth costs $125 or anything like that. Here we're offering you something for a fraction of what it normally costs. So we're sort of going the other direction because, well, we're donating the DVDs to the radio station, and the radio station is basically surviving as a result of our listeners out there. So it's a great deal. It's something that I really think people should take advantage of, and we can only offer it for another 25 minutes because, honestly, our DVD duplicating robot is about to go on strike, and if we keep making these full sets, it's not going to be very happy at all. So please call in 631-632-6901. Kyle, is there any convincing words you might be able to impart on our listeners?
Yeah, I think that people understand the importance of keeping the radio station going, and that it doesn't take a huge commitment. It's a quick phone call. Somebody's there to take down your info. It could be like $5 or $10, whatever you can really spare. I know a lot of stations, a lot of radio, everybody's got their fall drives going. So maybe it's like worthwhile for you to like sit back and think, like, how much does WUSB help me? You know, and come up with a figure, $15, whatever it is. Doesn't matter, but contribution makes a statement and keeps us going, keeps, like, off the wall and other interesting programming. I mean, WUSB has among, like, the most diverse stuff out on Long Island, and they have high hopes, too. There's good people. They've been around, what is it, 30 years? Is this year the 35th?
35th. We started in 1977. But this station and a lot of this equipment was around even before we went FM, because this was an AM carrier current station,
right,
that existed on campus. You could only get it on campus. But the people who built that station were shooting for the sky, because they were able to get record service from the record companies so that they had all the music to play. And basically be taken seriously enough to actually get a 4,000-watt FM station eventually after many years of trying. And that spirit continues to this day with a whole new cast of characters and a lot of the older people, too. People stick around because this place is so magical. So you have this unique mix of young and old, of students and community, and that's what makes WUSB the most unique radio station on Long Island. And I say that without fear of contradiction. If anyone out there would like to debate me on this, feel free, because virtually every radio station on Long Island and throughout the country has either been taken over by National Public Radio or simply gone off the air for one reason or another. This kind of thing is rare, and you wind up basically the non-commercial part of the dial winds up being almost as predictable as the commercial part of the dial. So places like WUSB are rare gems. If you're listening to us online, that's great too, because you can take part in it just as much as people who listen on their radios. And these days, you know, the difference between those two groups of people are becoming less and less. You can listen to us in your radio driving around in Seattle if you have the right kind of equipment. And, yeah, it might be confusing when we tell you that there's a flood watch out for parts of Patchogue. Okay, things like that I just look at as part of the charm of listening to local radio from distant places. But the music you hear and the conversation and the ideas that are brought up, those are all pertinent. Those are all things that you'll take with you for an entire day, for many days. And you can be a part of it as well. But most importantly, you can support us by dialing 631-632-6901. Fundraisers are an essential part of keeping a radio station like this going on the air. It really is. 631-632-6901. Still waiting for that call to come in. I can't believe it. At the other radio station, if I was to offer this package, we would have 20 calls like this. I know, you know, New York City is a big deal, But I do know people are listening in various parts of the world. Less of them, and that's why we're offering this, because there's less of you. If there were too many of you, we couldn't afford to do this. But if you're one of those people, you have an advantage just by being one of those people listening to us live. If you listen to us later, it's after 7 o'clock p.m. On Tuesday evening. We can't offer you the DVDs, unfortunately, but you can still call in and pledge support to the radio station and get all kinds of other cool things that the radio station offers. So that definitely helps. So when you do call in, make sure you tell them your favorite show is Off the Wall. But right now, we have volunteers standing by waiting to take your phone calls. We have a terrific premium for those people that want to call in, 631-632-6901.
It's really important that people call, because a lot of the young people, a lot of the new programming, the new people, new blood, you know, that are getting introduced to the station, they want to learn and they want to pick things up from the people who have been there for a while. But if the people that have been there are, you know, worried about, you know, the station's license and bills and this and that, they don't have the energy to be creative and think about all the programming that you enjoy and help push people in the right direction if they're just starting out. And that's really, like, the gift of the station. So if you can make a contribution, you can help move from the mundane stuff, like, you know, bills and upkeep, you know, maintenance of equipment. Don't even get started on that. But those things need to be taken care of. And by calling, you can sort of push that stuff out of the way because it'll be taken care of. And the people that do volunteer and work for the station will be less burdened and less encumbered with that kind of stuff, and hopefully have more energy and time to develop some of the programs or bring in students and other kinds of music shows, and maybe reach out and set up events and things like that. I do know that there's high hopes for the station to build a new facility and these kinds of things. These are very real things, and that's the kind of impact you can help with, those kinds of things, just by, like, dialing and sending in a couple bucks, telling your friends maybe to do the same. Maybe your family listens a lot. You can just remind people that the pledge drive is going on, and maybe they're not, you know, members of any other station, but WUSB is local and something that people love and appreciate. So, you know, call in now and support, because we really enjoy doing what we do, and this is the time of year when we appeal to listeners, and just reach out and get to basically say, hey, you know, all that equipment, all the things we want to do, they're still going on, and we're here, but we want you to contribute and be a part of making that stuff happen, because it takes money and time, and people are willing to volunteer, but coming up with the funds is part of the game. So please call in and support WUSB and Off the Wall young and exciting stuff that's going to be coming out of Stony Brook in the future. So
absolutely has in the past, will in the future. WUSB, if we were a sports team, we'd have working equipment. Is that really our new slogan? I like it. It's definitely apropos, but yeah, okay, cool. Support that. Support what Kyle said, because that certainly is important and vital to the community.
WUSB, if we were brain surgeons, we'd wash our hands.
Oh, there you go. You know, that reminds me of what they... You've been on campus. You've seen the buses. And when you're behind the buses, it says, you're behind some of the greatest minds in the world, or something like that. And it just goes to show how highly we think of our bus drivers, that we would say something like that about them. But when you're behind a Stony Brook bus, yes, in fact, you are traveling behind some of the greatest minds around, some of the greatest thinkers. Because when you're driving a bus, I guess you have a lot of time to think.
It's not the driver, E. It's the students that they're referring to. You do know that, right?
Well, no, because first of all, okay, no, Kyle, this is where I have to educate you on something.
What's the phone number again?
A bus does not always have passengers, okay? But a bus always does have a driver. So are you saying that sign is lying to me when I'm behind an empty bus and there's no great mind on that bus? I don't think so. I believe signs. Okay, you know what? Again, phone number 631-632-6901, but... We have something else to talk about tonight, which is important.
Yeah.
And that is the name Felix Baumgartner. Felix Baumgartner. Now, I never heard that name before until we were sitting in a bookstore / cafe in Pristina, Kosovo. Do you remember that, Kyle?
Hold on. Pristina, Kosovo.
Former Yugoslavia, you know. Okay.
Yeah.
So there we were. We were killing some time, I think. And you were reading a magazine, and you focused on this this guy who was about to do something incredible, and you were telling me all about it. And that's how every time his name comes up, I remember that. I remember that particular locale and what it was that that he was initially talking about doing.
Well, for people that don't know, what we're talking about is space diving.
Yes, not in Kosovo, but that's where we happened to be at the time.
Right.
But the article that you were reading was about space diving, and well, tell us what this guy Felix was planning.
Well, it's a jump from a high altitude balloon, and it had been done quite a bit of years earlier by Steve Kittinger, and basically Felix Baumgartner is teaming up with him and the energy drink company and a bunch of other partner groups, including David Clark, which is a company that makes spacesuits and flight suits, and they're really famous in aerospace. I mean, David Clark is everywhere in aerospace and stuff like that. So partly he's doing it to beat Joseph Kittinger's record. The other part is to see, it is to break several other records in the process. Joseph Kittinger dove from 100,000 feet. And what Felix is trying to do is jump from 120,000 feet.
Well, actually, 23 miles, to give you a sense of how much that...
3 kilometers, yeah.
But isn't the thing also that he is going to break the speed of sound doing that?
I was getting to that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to... Forget I said that, everybody.
Yeah. So, in the process of breaking several records and jumping, you know, from a higher altitude, he will be... It is thought that his body will accelerate past the speed of sound, so it'll break the sound barrier. And so they're having to design this spacesuit with that in mind.
No human has done that, right? I mean, people have done that inside of aircraft and things like that, but a human free-falling from space has never broken the sound barrier.
Right, and you got to understand, it's very dangerous. There's very little pressure up there, very little air, and... In fact, Joseph Kittinger, when he did it originally, had a seam on his suit that was open, and he got frostbite on the way down. So nobody's ever broken the sound barrier in a suit without like the shield of an aircraft of some kind. And so they've designed this suit in conjunction with that company I referred to that is all over in aerospace, and so they're testing it. To design these sort of next-generation spacesuits with the idea that, you know, if through this research they realize that he can survive passing the speed of sound, with all of that, they ultimately want to develop these suits for future space and, in particular, emergency egress systems from spacecraft, which... It's sort of the equivalent of having a parachute or an ejection seat in a military plane or a regular plane. You imagine if you're a space tourist or if you're working for a company in space, something goes haywire, you basically can jump out at 120,000 feet.
Yeah, I'll tell you, if I was a space tourist and I had to bail out 23 miles above Earth and come all the way down myself, I would want a refund.
Oh, no, you would definitely... at least get a rebate on your hotel room.
I would hope so, because who knows where you're going to land, you know? He's planning where he's going to land, but something goes wrong on a spacecraft, you could just wind up in Tahiti or something.
Yeah. So, they were going to, he's done a 30,000-foot jump as well as a 50,000-foot jump, and he was scheduled today to jump at 7 a.m. from, or go up in his balloon for several hours, at 7 a.m.
And can I point out, the balloon is 55 stories tall? Is that true? A balloon?
Yes.
55? That alone is amazing.
Yeah, if you can imagine a very, very long inverted teardrop or drop of water, I think that's kind of what it looks like. And it's a very, very thin helium balloon.
Okay, and he actually...
pressurized capsule up.
He soars all the way up in that thing.
Right, and they're actually planning on broadcasting it with a 20-second delay, given a tragedy or something, they'd be able to cut off the coverage. But they're videotaping the whole thing from 30 different angles, and they were planning on having a live broadcast. And they're using ultra-high-definition cameras for all of these angles, which is really interesting. So the capture, the photography itself, will be very, very beautiful and rich in resolution.
That alone, to me, is worth it, just getting that. And we're doing a lot of really cool things with photography lately, capturing all kinds of angles of things that have never been captured before. It's a very exciting time.
Yeah, and I think it's emblematic of what a lot of hackerspaces are doing. People are getting very interested in space, sending things up into space, sending light into space, doing, you know, balloons and their own sort of rocketry, things like that, with sending up cameras and things like, you know, you've even seen it then applied commercially. I think some laptop company took sort of what a lot of hackers were doing and, like, sent up their laptop on a balloon and, you know, started using it in commercials. So it's getting pretty exciting. Whether you're a, you know, a SpaceX type company or you're just a hackerspace, people are really looking up for life, or, you know, to the skies, to the heavens for life, and really reaching for it.
And didn't the rocket launch yesterday, and the second launch of that unmanned private enterprise rocket?
I'm not sure. I haven't been following it.
I believe it did, on its way to the space station. So there's that, too.
Interesting. So is this another unmanned SpaceX
yes.
capsule, then?
Yes.
A resupply?
A resupply, yes. That was my understanding. So, things are, there is progress being made. Really interesting things. Okay, so now what happened with Felix today? We were talking about this earlier this morning.
Hey.
And I was trying to imagine what goes through the mind of somebody who's basically preparing to jump 23 miles above Earth and land safely. They were talking about how he was basically hanging out with his family. He was with his parents, his girlfriend, a few close friends, had a light dinner of salmon and a salad, then had a massage. You know, I don't care. None of that would be enough to calm me down, thinking that, okay, I'm going to jump out from space and land on the ground. But so then what wound up happening today?
Right. So yeah, I'm sure he was not out drinking or anything, because
that's what I'd be doing.
That's really dangerous. If he tears his suit at all when he leaves, I read that, you know, your blood could begin boiling and.
Could you have a beer on the way down though? I guess that's probably not recommended.
Yeah, I'd maybe have some mimosa when I get to the, you know, ground. You know, like brunch to celebrate or something.
Yeah. I want to do something on the way down. How long does it take to get down, for one thing?
10 minutes.
10 minutes. Yeah, I mean, you could do all kinds of cool things in 10 minutes, I suppose. But I guess just doing it the first time is the real goal here.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine he could cover some ground if he had a bit of a wingsuit, which I'm sure he's familiar with.
Yes,
know,
that's a whole other thing.
120,000 feet, he could probably cross a couple states and land somewhere else.
Well, I'm waiting for somebody just to fly around the entire planet, you know, just do one revolution and then land.
Yeah, I love this stuff, though. I really think it's exciting learning about the equipment, and there's even another company that's out that's designing spacesuits, Orbital Outfitters. I just read about that.
Well, this is the magic. This is the magic of being human. You always dream about these things, and you try things that maybe don't make economic sense or practical sense, but they're beautiful, and they make you want to do more. And, you know, I try to explain it to people in explaining space exploration, why it's important for people to go out there and to walk around and explore and just basically take it all in and describe it to the rest of us. And that is vital. I mean, we can send all the probes we want. We can do all the other things, but without that human touch, we're not conveying the magic of the whole thing.
So let me wrap it up. Basically,
yes.
They were set up to leave. As you said, he had been prepared. He was in one of those Airstream trailers, like the big silver ones they've always used with NASA astronauts, getting ready. And as I read it, what happened was... they have flight restrictions for winds with the balloon, and let's see, it says, before sunrise, with winds at 700 feet above the ground, the top of the balloon were 20 miles an hour, far above the 3-mile-per-hour maximum for a safe launch.
I think what happened is it wound up being too windy up there, right? It was like, I think the maximum...
I'm messing up.
Well, okay, the long and the short of it is he didn't do it. He didn't do it because I think the maximum the winds could be to be safe were 3 miles an hour, and there was something like 20 miles an hour.
Exactly.
It doesn't sound like much.
He was getting already, and the winds were already well faster than they should have been. They were waiting for them to calm by the time it got inflated, and then they canceled it.
Yeah.
So he was ready to go, and even in the face of some dangerous weather, they were hopeful that it was going to pass. But that's what happened. It was around 20 miles an hour, as you said, and it was just way too fast at the top where the balloon was.
And apparently, where he was going to be jumping from, it was 70 degrees below zero. So that's why it's very important not to have a rip in your suit.
Yes.
Because that could be fatal.
That's what we're learning about with space. We want to know how to reliably interact up there and send people tissue, skin.
Yeah, you know, we could devote an entire show every week to the various projects and experiments that are taking place involving space, involving pushing boundaries. That might be a good idea because it really is inspirational and more ideas come out of it. And like you say, hackerspaces are tied into this very, very keenly. And everyone seems to really be following in, fascinated, and inspired by the whole thing. You know, something today that I just read about, this was pretty amazing, the Mars rover today, I'm ashamed to admit this, but I saw this on Twitter because we follow the Mars, the Curiosity rover. They have a Twitter feed, and the Curiosity rover said, "I see something bright." Okay, somebody typed that, obviously, but "I see something bright near me." Apparently what happened was some shiny object is in the soil next to where Curiosity is moving around. There's some speculation that it might be a piece of the rover, which, to me, that seems a little unsettling that a piece of the rover might have fallen onto the ground. Or it could be something else. It could be some kind of mineral. It could be maybe a different rover from a different civilization. Who knows? There's all kinds of possibilities. But the point is, right now there is something on the surface of Mars that they have not explained yet.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's great.
That's pretty brilliant. I'm fascinated. I want to know. That's fantastic. So,
I wish I could get NASA TV on any of my satellite or cable systems because it's the coolest channel to have on in the background. You just basically see these things happening or you hear reports of them, and it's just it's very science-y and something that I'm happy about.
Let's have this conversation some more. I mean, I enjoy talking about space. I enjoy talking about all the different things, whether it's traffic here or the exciting space diving that's going on, all the neat stuff that's been in the news, all that exploration that's going on in the world, or just, you know, figuring out our terrestrial world here and everything that's going on. But we need people to call in, right?
So yes, we do.
If you haven't made a pledge yet, please call.
631-632-6901. And again, for the next 5 minutes, we're offering the $150 offer of every Hope DVD from Hackers on Planet Earth.
Every single DVD?
Every single one, about 100 of them. July 2012 is when this conference took place. It wasn't very long ago at all. Very pertinent information, all kinds of... If you thought this was an interesting conversation, imagine times 100. That's what you'll basically be getting for that pledge. But most importantly, you'll be supporting the radio station, keeping us on the air so we can have future shows with all kinds of new people taking part and keeping this place alive. Once more, the phone number is 631-632-6901. Kyle, as always, it's been a pleasure talking, and the time just flies by. There's all kinds of interesting things going on in the world, and it's great to pay attention to it all.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for giving me the opportunity, and please have me on again. I'm a bit distracted. I'm very busy out here, and I don't know, maybe it's all the traffic, but...
it's all the heat.
Definitely, I'll...
all the sunshine.
Cool stuff to share on another show.
Hey, you know, today would have been John Lennon's 72nd birthday, and he's one guy that I know would take a very strong interest in all the things that we've talked about, and someone who's always been an inspiration to so many of us around here as well. So, of course, we have to go out with something by John Lennon. Wouldn't that be appropriate, Kyle?
I only know what's inappropriate.
Well, then, to some, this might be inappropriate as well. Until next time, Kyle, you take care.
Likewise.
All right. And this is Emmanuel for Off the Wall. We'll see you next week. Again, the phone number is 631-632-6901, or write to us, otw@2600.com. Here's John Lennon.
I don't expect you.
That was a gooner. Sorry.
Oh, that's the same.
Yeah,
it was nice.
What?
It was just going very well.
I know.
Maybe you can cut it together.
Yeah, that was very good, wasn't it?
Remember that, man.
Yeah, remember those bits. We'll keep them. What went wrong?
Yeah, I didn't come in with you. It's my fault.
Oh. Well, all right. That's fine. As long as I know what happened.
Got it made. Don't they know we're so afraid? Isolation. We're afraid to be alone. Everybody got to have a home. Isolation. A boy and a little girl trying to change the whole wide world. Isolation. The world is just a little town. Everybody trying to pull us down.
I concentrated less on the voice and more on both.